Welcome to Cycle Breakers and Moneymakers, a podcast for women of color and first gen who are breaking generational cycles and glass ceilings by going places no one before them has ever gone. I'm your host, leadership coach, and eldest daughter of immigrants, Mariela De La Mora. I left a 16-year marketing career to create a multiple six-figure-a-year coaching business as a single mom. Each week, you'll learn how to build unshakable self-trust, become in demand, lead with confidence, and make more money by being more of who you are. Hello, everyone. I am so excited for our conversation today. Our guest, Gina Knox, has been someone who has been so influential to my growth as an entrepreneur, not just like mindset-wise, but also my actual business because of my relationship with money. So we're going to talk today about how you can't scale your business with bad thoughts about money. And for the most part, unless we change our thoughts about money, we probably have bad thoughts about money. Most of us do. So I'm so excited for our chat today. I have so many questions that I want to ask Gina, things that I want to share with the community that have just been so life-changing for me. So we're going to start. I'm going to intro Gina, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit about me working with her and how that's impacted me, and then we'll dive in. So Gina Knox is a financial coach for entrepreneurs with variable income. She teaches entrepreneurs how to build their business savings to $1,000, $10,000, and then $100,000 in her 12-month program, Six Figure Saver. And then she helps her clients create a seven-figure wealth portfolio with her mastermind, Seven Figure Wealth. Over her career as a coach, Gina has helped her clients save $6.8 million in the last 3 years. Gina is a Mexican mom, an art school grad, a designer, a hobby potter, a world traveler, and a money nerd. And there's so much there just around the growth of our money, learning how to save, learning how to invest, all of that, which we'll talk about today. I was actually in Gina's Mastermind Seven Figure Wealth, where I set up my investment portfolio for the first time in my 40s, so it is never too late. And it has since made me over $10,000 in returns over the last 10 months. Gina doesn't even know this. And prior to Seven Figure Wealth, it was just sitting in savings. She also helped me with setting my daughter up with a trust fund, which it's set to autopilot. I'm going to contribute to it until she's 21. I barely even noticed the money. It's going to be worth $7 million when she retires if I don't add any more to it. She has coached me basically through like a lot of what I would say like money related circumstances. Like anyone who knows me and knows my story knows daughter of immigrants, single parent. I was on food stamps 7 years ago, had to start over. So like if Gina can coach me through these things, she can coach anybody through all their thoughts about money. I'm just so, so excited to dive in and talk about how our thoughts about money need to change if we want to scale. So Gina, thank you. Thank you for being here. Welcome to Cycle Breakers and Moneymakers.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. And I'm so excited for your portfolio growth. Hey. Yeah,
you didn't know that. I was just let me check my numbers.
So the market's been doing really nice recently too. So that's fun.
It has. And I know, and I mean, obviously I have that now where I'm like, I know it can go up and down, but it definitely changes your brain chemistry when you see those numbers shift and, you know, realizing like, wow, like a lot can change in a short amount of time. And like, I'm so glad that it's growing because it's passive income. And we'll talk about that too, because it's also just like my thoughts about money in general, knowing that I'm not the only person that is working for my money to grow, which is huge. So I would love if you could just share a little bit more about like your story and how you ended up coaching entrepreneurs specifically on money, because coaching entrepreneurs is different than coaching anybody who does not have variable income. So I would love to, you could just kind of open a little bit with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been interested in money as a topic. I learned a lot about money from my dad. I learned a lot about the wealth building investment side. He was a lawyer specifically in municipal finance. So he wasn't like a court lawyer. He was like a let's work with cities who are going bankrupt to draft bonds that will save the city from going bankrupt. Very, very heavy on the brainiac money side of law. So he taught me so much about wealth building. And my mom was a stay-at-home mom, 4 kids. It's funny because like my dad was a high earner and my mom always acted like we were poor. She was very much like budget, thrift store, you got to share a Coke with your sister when you go out to dinner. Like, and we only ever go out to dinner after church on Sundays. There's no other like time that we go out. Very much like I legitimately thought we were low income until I was a teenager. And I realized, wait, we're actually kind of wealthy. Like my mom hid that from us, which I'm actually quite grateful for. I think that there was some interesting parenting choices there. All that being said, very much surrounded by the topic of money growing up. And then I went to design school. I became a designer. And my first manager at the internship that I was interning at during college was like, what do you want to do? Like, as you go into the workforce. And I just remember blurting out, like, I think I want to work in fintech, in financial technology. Then I heavily, heavily pursued a position at Intuit, at QuickBooks. They were hiring. I wanted to work for them specifically because I remember my first experience filing taxes, being so scared. Oh my God, like what are taxes? Like, what do I have to? I remember it was like, I was like 19 years old or something. And I'm like, what are taxes? What do you have to submit? What is it? I like didn't know. TurboTax saved my ass. And I remember feeling like, I want to work for this company. I'm a designer. I can help design stuff like this. This is what I want to do. Heavily pursued them. And I ended up getting a job at QuickBooks, which is Intuit owns TurboTax and QuickBooks. QuickBooks is small business accounting. And I became a researcher there.
And that's so interesting that you had the fascination, because not everybody has the, oh my gosh, like overwhelm about money. And then it turns into curiosity and intrigue that you want to actually venture into it. Some people are like, eh, don't want to think about money.
Well, and I think a lot of that came from having a positive, two positive role models around money. Like money was never something that we were worried about, or as much as like my mom modeled very heavy budgeting and like tried to convince us we were poor. I think that there was like a good money mindset in the household is how I would describe it. So even though I was scared of this one circumstance of taxes, I had a foundation of like, no, this can be figured out. Like this is not life ending. And so I think it was easy to turn it into the curiosity, which then led to beating down their door until they get a job.
It makes sense. And that's an important note, because I think that I'm always just very fascinated with how people think, like why people think what they think, and when they think things differently than I did. And I think what some folks will do is because they don't understand something in their business. For example, if I were to say, what's your monthly recurring revenue or what's your projected revenue, and they don't know the answer, that they will make that mean something about themselves rather than everything can be figured out. Because I heard you say that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that was just like the byproduct of my parents modeling that for me, which was so, so helpful. Either way, coming back, working at QuickBooks now, dream job, great team, love everyone I work with, really passionate about the subject matter, very interesting job. My whole job was to interview small business owners all day long. Like, that was just what I got to do.
Yeah.
In 5 years, I think I interviewed, by the time I left, it was either 400 or 500 entrepreneurs in 5 years.
Wow. Talk about like market research, like accidentally, to be like, I know their brains so well.
I know their brains so well. And like, it was in-depth research, like, okay, pull up your QuickBooks. And we were like going through their finances together. So very, very much spent a lot of time building up my expertise there. And then I went through this period of career dissatisfaction, which was very unsettling because nothing had technically gone wrong. Like I was getting paid well. I respected my coworkers, which is, by the way, just huge, like to actually like your coworkers. I liked the subject matter. So it was like nothing wrong with the job, but I just had this sense of like, oh, like what's going on? And a friend recommended, she's like, why don't you do financial coaching? And I didn't even know what the coaching industry was. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, I'll be your first client. And I'm like, okay. So we just started. And I was working with her, budgeting, looking at her money, looking at her 401k. And I started working with women in tech because that's who I was. And then I started taking my business more seriously in 2020. And midway through 2020, I was like, wait, I have this whole subject matter expertise.
Yeah.
From my job at QuickBooks. And I have the other side, like, why am I not marrying these two together? So this light bulb moment happened and I'm like, oh, that needs to be my person. Cause like, I love helping entrepreneurs.
like a transferable skill that you didn't. When I think about when we go from job to job, we're thinking transferable skills, but we don't always think transferable skills when it comes to our jobs versus entrepreneurship. And you were like sitting on a gold mine.
100%. And then the irony was too, like entrepreneurs were attracted to me organically anyways, and I wasn't even trying. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You were probably speaking
to them in a way like nobody else was directly speaking to them, because I remember being annoyed at money coaching. I was even in programs before, and I just felt very frustrated with it because it wasn't speaking to variable income, although I didn't have the words for it back then. So I think that's what you were probably doing.
Probably subconsciously I was doing that. And I would also say too, like, I come from a design background. I went to design school, and I think entrepreneurs are such an interesting group to design for. Like, there's a lot that we actually have to work around with variable income and variable expenses. And like, it's quite a tricky design problem. So that was always very fun for me. Like, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah. And I think you also tend to see solutions in visuals as well, because I think you coach in that way. I don't actually know this concept personally, but I know that you have like a waterfall concept in Six Figure Saver. And I think that for those of us who are overwhelmed by things, I'm such a visual person that I feel like the way that you're like, how would we construct the solution as a design, but also like, you know, even like visually.
I mean, even like in Six Figure Saver, my core foundations program, we have spreadsheets in the program, but it's almost like the spreadsheet is a bonus. You don't need to use them to make the cash flow waterfall work. And I very much always thought about it that way. Like, there's people who, the minute they look at a spreadsheet, their brain goes mush. So I was like, how can I design a saving system that works without needing a spreadsheet at all? And that's like, I really take my brain there to push myself to think very innovatively in ways that help with like, assuming no one is going to change. I'm going to assume nothing, no one's going to change. So how can I make my solution fit them instead of having them fit my solution?
Absolutely. And that's what makes like a good product. When you don't have to make people change their behavior to use the product, you design it to fit the way that people will naturally operate. And so it's an easier like sell. So I think that's just also just good design and good like business.
I agree. And I think like it was so natural for me because I'd spent 7 years in Silicon Valley as a designer doing that.
Yes. Absolutely. I can see that. And I think that that helps also entrepreneur brains. We tend to be entrepreneurs because we aren't always like spreadsheet linear thinkers, even though that's something that like quote unquote comes with the job, but it's like something we tolerate versus like we're just dying to get into it. Like, you know, we're a little bit more rebellious in our thinking and maybe less structured. I was wondering, like, I know that you coach entrepreneurs at different income levels. I know from like earlier stage business all the way to seven figures. What are kind of some of the most common things that you coach on for entrepreneurs that have not made six figures yet? And when I say you, I mean like your programs. Like, so when you think about the mindset shifts or the beliefs or the behaviors that have to happen before someone gets to six figures, maybe some of the things that trip people up, what are some of those things?
Yeah. One of the big things is, especially before you've hit six figures, is treating your business like a business, not a hobby. And from a financial perspective, treating your business financially like a business, not a hobby. So what that'll look like is open separate business bank accounts, right? Like, so many people wait. Another thing that that will look like is make a business budget. And what's interesting is so many people who are entrepreneurs also are like, ew, budgeting. And I want to make enough money that I don't have to budget. And I think that comes from a personal finance perspective of, in personal finance, budgeting often means cutting your expenses down as much as possible. In business, budgeting means your business needs an operating budget. You need to decide how you're going to spend your business's money so you can earn more money. But because people are so anti-budget, they don't do that. And then they miss out on actual business growth. So we need to learn how to spend our business's money properly. I would say that like learning how to spend properly is one of the core business skills. And we could talk about it because we waste hundreds of thousands of dollars on shit we don't need and that is costing us sales. It's directly costing you in sales. So that's a core thing. And then I would say maybe one other core thing under the 100K mark is a lot of people are waiting to pay themselves an owner's pay until 100K. And it's like, you're not going to magically have profit that wasn't there before at 100K. You have to treat yourself, coming back to treating your business like a business, not a hobby. You are your business's most important employee. You deserve compensation. But in order to start compensating yourself properly, you need to compensate yourself at all. And that might look like $100 a month. And I mean, for me, my first owner's pay was $500 a month. But I wish I would have started paying myself in year one instead of waiting till midway through year two. I wasted a lot of money because I was treating my business like a little hobby.
Yeah. And then the inconsistency around, I don't know if I'm going to get paid this month. We'll see how well the business does, also creates this like anxiety about sales, because you're like, well, I don't know if I'm going to get paid. Imagine if you went to work and you were like, well, I only get paid if the company is doing like, let's look at our Q2 report.
Like, who would show up to work? Like, you're there to get paid.
Right.
And it's funny. So coming back also to the interesting design problem, I teach a owner's pay system that you pay yourself the same amount of money every month, regardless of sales. And that's coming back to like, okay, there are solutions to these problems if we sit down and design them. It's not like a circumstance that you are subject to and it can never change.
Yeah. I've also seen the opposite side of the coin of like some entrepreneurs are like, they almost think like they should be getting everything that the business brings in.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, no. We have to plan for the business needs an operating budget to run. And then I'll see them start to like snip it because they need to make a certain amount. And I'm like, I think the way that we even think about business is not like money coming in, money going into your bank account. It's like money coming in, the business needs money. And then how do you pay yourself consistently from that is another
check. I always tell my clients, this is spicy, I'm like, your business is not your personal ATM. Especially for the people who pull money randomly. They'll be like, oh, I have rent, let me pull money. Oh, I have this, I want to go on this trip, pull money. Like, your business is not your personal ATM. Your owner's pay should be robust enough to cover your life. And then there may be opportunities for owner's bonuses, but you just like the CEO of Intuit isn't just pulling money out of Intuit's bank account whenever he wants some extra cash. That's like not how that works.
Yes. In fact, one of the things you helped me with at a time that I didn't feel financially secure to do it was to give myself $1,000 a month. I think you said $2,000. I actually ended up doing like $1,000 and then it went to $2,000. And at the time it seemed like bonkers to me, but the reason that it made sense was because I consistently was running out of money every month, meaning I would go to my personal checking and I was getting overdraft notifications. And I know there's entrepreneurs who are sitting and they're getting overdraft notifications because they don't want to pay themselves enough. But I'm like, how is this actually helping me spend in the way that I want to spend? It's not, it's just making me feel scarce. And I feel like I've made more money since I paid myself more money because I wasn't feeling this insecure attachment to like, I'm working so hard, but yet I'm overdrafting on my checking account because I'm underpaying myself. It was almost like a intentional delusion. So
yeah, I think too, fundamentally, like this can maybe really hit for us, especially as women. You are worthy of compensation, period. You're worthy of compensation. And so many business owners, especially in the beginning stages, they pay, but also not just in the beginning stages, they pay themselves last. Like, okay, if there's money left after I pay my team, after I pay my VA, after I pay for this, after I pay for that, then I can pay myself. And it's like, why are you, the most important person in your business, getting paid last?
And you would never not pay your team or like not pay your software.
Right. You would never not pay those things. So like, how about we also just get in the habit of never not paying you? Because you deserve compensation, but it is a skill. I think that this is where people get caught up. I think people think compensation, owner's pay, is the result of sales. It's not. Owner's pay is the result of implementing a process. Same with savings. Savings is not the result of sales because there's people who have tons of sales and no savings. Savings is the result of implementing a savings process. And you do need sales to make that process work, but sales alone will not generate that outcome.
Yes, I think that makes sense. And I think I'm already like, okay, there's folks that have thoughts about that around like, yes, but I need money and like the money needs to go into the business bank account. But then I think about like, what's going to help you bring money into the business? Is it going to be you not having money to pay, you know, in your actual bank account? And I think part of that too, it probably also comes from folks who don't have the separate bank accounts. Because that's something that I didn't realize I did very early on, but I did. And when I talked to some of my clients and I realized they still have it all in one account, they typically always have a lot of like anxious thoughts about money. So I think that might be another reason
and
that they're like, well, I can't.
When it's all commingled, A, you don't have a sense of your profitability at all because you can't see it.
Yeah.
It's all just mixed in. And you don't have an owner's pay because it's like, what do you mean owner's pay? It's all just there.
Yeah. And I'm just trying not to spend it, essentially, is what it is. And then they start just cutting across the board instead of thinking about how to spend your money profitably, which is what I wanted to ask you about next. Talk to us about what does it mean to spend your money profitably? And I'll phrase it because there was a question that I was going to ask you that basically was this question, but you have talked about ROI, like spending in a way that produces ROI, and that growth is really just about making more ROI investments versus no ROI investments. The thing is, I think that folks have to learn what does that actually mean? Because I think that there are times we make investments and we think they're ROI investments and they're not. And I know that ROI isn't always making more money from that program, but it's more so of like, what does it allow you to do in conjunction with everything else that you are doing to bring in money to the business? So yeah, talk to us about like, what does it mean to spend money profitably?
Okay. First, we have to realize that personal finance has no place in business finance. Because if we think about personal finance, what is the goal of personal finance advice? The goal is to reduce your expenses so that you can save more and invest and build wealth and blah, 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 blah. The goal is literally reduce expenses. In your business, the goal is never to reduce expenses. I mean, you may reduce expenses, but that's not the goal. The goal is to grow income. How do we grow our income? Well, at the core, businesses spend money to make money. So if you spend money on the right things, you'll make more money. And if you waste your business's budget on things you don't need, you will not make money. That's it. It's like, once you kind of put it that way, it's like, oh, wow, that's much more controllable than I thought. So many people have the thought, I can't control my sales, but you can control your spending. And if you can control your spending, you can control your sales.
This is true, especially if you're cutting it into things that are a lifeline to you making more sales. It's
right.
Like cutting off water in a water hose or something.
Absolutely. So how do we identify those things? I have a framework. I did an entire podcast series on this. So if anyone wants to have more of a deep dive, it's there. It's called the Spender Series. I'm sure I could find like what number it is. But there's five types of business spending. You want to cut four and double down on one. So the ones you want to cut is future problem spending. This is where you spend money to solve future problems that your business doesn't have yet, but that you anticipate having. So many people do this because it sounds smart. Oh, I'm going to fix a problem before it happens. But number one, you don't actually know if that problem will ever happen or not until you're there. So you may waste money solving a problem that was never going to happen. And number two, until you're in the problem, you can't define the problem. And if you can't define the problem, you can't solve the problem. It's my favorite category to waste money.
I'm so curious, like, what have you seen fall into that category of a future problem?
I'll just tell you mine. I made $30K. And I spent $10,000 on a mastermind for ads and funnels.
Oh.
Why did I do that? Because I was like so uncomfortable with learning how to sell my offer that I'm like, a funnel will solve it. Spoiler alert, it didn't. I still had to learn how to sell my thing. Or like, okay, I'm just starting a podcast and now I'm going to pay for a $15,000 podcast strategy, the blah, 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 blah. Like, okay, girl, but like, let's just start the podcast. Let's just figure it out, right? It's taking your current business, like thinking about 6 months ahead of time and then paying money to solve 6 months ahead of time's problems when you don't even have them yet. What if you abandon the podcast?
Yeah. I was even thinking about when people invest in like fancy websites and branding and they don't actually know how to sell their offers yet, then it's like that's something that would help you scale, but not something that would help you sell if you already don't know how to sell and you don't know your offer.
Right. There's so many examples of that. There's mm-hmm. also like people hire team members because they're like, well, in 6 months, I'm going to have 100 people in my group. So I need a co-coach now because it's going to take me 6 months to train them. No, it's not. Don't hire team members ahead of time. Hire team. And that may sound controversial, but like you're going to waste so much payroll waiting for the circumstance that you need the team member for instead of just waiting and then hiring them then. So many things. Future problem spending. The problem is, it feels so smart. You feel like a smart CEO. That's why I fall into it. I'm like, I'm so smart. I'm going to get ahead of this. No, number one. Number two, boredom or FOMO spending. You're just bored. So you're like, oh, that course looks fun. No, your business isn't here for your entertainment. What I tell my clients when they're falling into FOMO or boredom spending is take the amount of money you were going to spend in that thing. Give yourself a bonus and do something fun in your life. Go get a life. Your business isn't here for your entertainment. Go on a trip. I don't care. You were going to spend $2,000 on a course you don't even need. Meanwhile, you haven't gone on a vacation in 5 years. Go get a life.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I do that in my life too as a mom sometimes where I'm like, I'm thinking about spending on stuff and I'm like, I probably should buy myself a new bra. Like, what are you doing? Out of order.
No, totally. So boredom spending, cut it out. What was the other one? People-pleasing spending. This is when you spend money to try and control other people's thoughts and feelings about you. This may look like paying your VA for extra hours, even though you don't need extra hours because you know they're a single mom and they really need money. So you're trying to help them. This looks like joining your friend's mastermind because you love your friend, not because you actually need their mastermind. And what sucks about that is like, you're going to be a terrible client. You're not going to be a good case study for them. It's a lose-lose situation here. There's so many ways we people please spend. Cut it out. It doesn't work.
I definitely see it a lot in team where you're just like my team's going over on hours and like rather than actually looking at what's happening, it's just like, oh, well, it's just happening. I'm asking them to do a lot.
You know what? I've done this too where you're like on a sales call and you know it's like, oh, this is a no, but then you say yes. Because you're like, I feel bad. I'm on a sales call. It's okay to walk away. And it's better to walk away and say just like no instead of like, maybe I'll think about it. If you know it's a no, say it's a no.
And that sometimes saying yes to money actually costs you money.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I feel that in other ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's three. Number four, this might be hurtful. Identity spending. Identity spending is when you spend money to try and buy an identity. This is like, what would my $1 million self do? My $1 million self would fly first class. So I'm going to do that so I can be in my $1 million energy. But guess what? You cannot buy identities because identities are the thoughts you think about yourself, regardless of the circumstance. I'm back sitting in coach thinking I'm a millionaire and you're sitting in first class, wasting money you don't even have, trying to convince yourself you are one.
Gina, can I tell you that what that brought up for me? I'll see this with lifestyle, I think, where it's like people will be like, I'd want to have this lifestyle and then it's this $1 million self. But it's like, how do you feel about it while you're doing it? Does that feel like it's just not even a big deal? Or is it like, I'm doing this because I think it's going to get me a result or it's going to get me a thing by me spending? And if I feel this way, help me make money, but you can't have the attachment to making the money by spending on the lifestyle or on the identity. So that's been kind of the decision.
Very, very much so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, you'll see people who are like, I'm going to make this $25,000 investment and it's going to push me into getting the ROI. And it's like, no, it's really
hard. I think it's something I've been sitting with now about like, where have I, because I think we all will fall. It's almost like you don't know you've done it until you've done it. And then you're just like, okay, I kind of get it now. And it will tell you, but that's okay. Because sometimes we have to do that and then evaluate, you know.
Well, like, this is the caveat with all of this is I've done every single one of these and I've never shamed myself for it. I just go, oops, okay, lesson learned, write it down. But I mean, the way I even came up with this framework was by reflecting on my own spending and my client's spending and being like, oh, these are some really, really high level lessons. Great. But you don't have to shame yourself if you've done them. We've all done them. There is a part of learning.
That's such an important part that I learned from you about not shaming yourself because it isn't helpful. And that sometimes we're like, the shame is actually what causes the problem more so than the decision itself.
Because we all have to make the decision. we just show up really shitty in our businesses when we're shaming ourselves.
Yeah, I think we also try to make up for the past when that's impossible in the present. I did that. You coached me on that around trying to make up for the past in the present. And I was like, how is that even fair? Like, I'm going to try to put pressure on myself to like undo the past. It's like, no, we're here now.
Yeah, we're here. Let's get to work.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are the four I want you to go through your expenses and ruthlessly cut. That's the only time I'm ever going to tell you to cut your expenses if you're doing one of those four things. The fifth type is spending, business spending, current problem spending. You're spending money to solve a current problem in your business. So let's go back to me at 30K a year, spending 10K on a funnels mastermind. If I would have spent 10K instead of on a funnels mastermind, on a one-on-one business coach who would help me figure out how to sell my one-on-one offer, I probably would have made 50K. But instead, I spent like 10K, I made like 4K, and I wasted 6 months. Current problem spending will always generate an ROI. And my kind of rule of thumb is a 5X ROI. Even if it's not, like you said, like one-to-one. For example, if you are experiencing a lot of emotional turmoil, working with a therapist to feel better, to like understand yourself, could easily create a 5X ROI in your business, even though it's not necessarily the therapist giving you marketing advice.
Yes. But if you think of the upside of that, I think about like, well, what's the upside? It's like, well, how do you do when you feel your best? And could this therapy, like this therapist, help you get closer to feeling your best so that you can make this 5 times more money than you're making right now? Yeah.
This also happens in team. I'll give you an example of future problem spending I did with team and then current problem. So once I just finished a six-figure year, my first six-figure year, I hired a lead gen person for $1,500 a month to do like cold DMs. Future problem. I didn't have that problem.
Yeah. And future you would solve it differently. I think too, future you would probably solve it differently.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's like, I'm trying to solve a future problem, but I don't even know what the problem is yet. So I wasted, what's 1500 times three? I did 3 months, $4,500. I wasted $4,500 on a team member I didn't need. Cut to today, I have an OBM that's $3K a month. Double the price, right? It's not about price. Double the price. She makes me so much, like the amount of work that they take off my plate lets me have time to show up to my business the way I need. And not just like the time that I buy from her, but the seamless client experience I have because my OBM is doing customer support, is making sure that all the reminders go out on time. Anytime someone in Slack is like locked out, she answers it, right? Like that is having a 5X ROI on my business. Meanwhile, the other team member didn't because I was trying to hire future problem roles.
And that's it's a good example to share around that it is not about the amount of the investment. It is it solving a present problem and freeing you up and allowing you to bring in more money to the business? It makes me also think about, you've talked about this on your podcast around spending money well and how that applies in our life as well in terms of like, you gave an example of how you would spend you spend more money on this shampoo or something like that reminds you of like a hotel that you went to, and that versus like the Costco brand, and it might be cheaper, but it's like you want to spend your money well if it helps you feel like it's just worth it to you. That's part of a shift that I know that I've made is like deciding where am I spending my money well versus like where am I maybe like spending to have an identity I don't yet have. But that's been a journey for me to just be like, just give yourself the thing that you really want. Like, is it really that big of a deal? And are you going to deprive yourself? So I feel like that's like the flip side too of like allowing yourself to just spend money on things that like feel good without, you know, going crazy. We're not talking like first class if you shouldn't be spending on first class, but shampoos, like, you know, let yourself.
I have a personal finance spending framework that's coming out very similar, and it goes over. And I think what you're talking about is what I would call enrichment spending, spending money that enriches your life. And I think it should have a 5X joy ROI. But just like in business, we also do people-pleasing spending. Like, have you ever said yes to being a bridesmaid when you really wanted to say no?
Oh, yeah. Or like a trip you don't want to go on.
A girls trip you don't want to go on. Mm-hmm. A restaurant that's very expensive that you didn't really
I have friends who like to go on tasting menu things. And I'm like, I personally would rather go on a trip than go get a tasting menu. I don't care. Like, so I think that's true.
Yeah. So we do people-pleasing spending in our personal lives too. Oof. We do boredom spending in our personal lives.
Yeah.
We do identity spending in our personal lives. So a lot of these apply. There's a couple, I'm going to be putting together an entire thing, but absolutely. Like, if you do have to be ruthless with yourself and really say, does this actually give me a 5x ROI or not? But if it does, it is often worth it.
I see that a lot in my clients because they come from, you know, many of them, almost all of them have like immigrant parents. And so very deeply embedded, like save above everything else. And that if something brings you joy, it's bad and selfish. And they may not be using those words, but I think that's how it feels in their body. And I, you know, something that I've learned in my journey and in also working with you is that like how I feel makes me money and it's important. And the things that I was depriving myself of were actually very simple things that didn't cost a lot of money that I wouldn't even blink an eye if it was in a business investment. But because it was for me, it was like, oh no, well, like I just shouldn't have that. And how that's just shifted like how I feel about myself and what I think I'm worthy of and like all those things. It's almost like releasing shame about spending money on joy and that joy innately has a value.
I had to do a ton of unlearning about this because my mom is a budget queen. And I rent like literally all the way through high school, only shopped at thrift stores, like except for underwear and shoes, maybe. And at a thrift store, you don't spend more than $10 on a shirt. And I remember like really struggling with spending more than $20 on a shirt. Oh, and then I worked with a stylist and I started spending like $100 on a t-shirt. And I'm like, oh my God, it really triggered me. But the way I got through it was, is spending $5 on a shirt on a fast fashion brand part of my values? No.
Part of my values. Yeah.
I actually value high quality garments. Let's just stick with clothes. I value high quality garments and I value supporting companies that aren't participating in like slave labor, slave wages. I really value that. And I really value my time. And my mom really valued the hunt at the thrift store. So she really loved that. And she wasn't participating in necessarily the fast fashion brands at the time, although maybe there could be a case to be said. But like for her, the thrift store was fun. For me, I'm like, I don't have time to dig through the thrift store. So if I want thrift store prices, I'm either going to do fast fashion and that doesn't jive with me. So I'm just going to get over it. And it took it was hard. Or the sharing the sodas at the restaurant, like to let my daughter have her own meal at a restaurant. And then if she doesn't eat it all, not be mad. That's like a whole new, like a whole new edge for me.
Yep. That makes me think the spending according to your values is also, I think, how maybe sometimes people get tripped up on spending the way someone else spends and being like, oh, well, if I, you know, want to have this identity or like I deserve this, but it's like they may just value a different thing than you. And it's just like picking the things that you value. Like I think about how I let myself spend more money on where I live because I know like I'm here all the time. How I feel where I live like really, really matters. I love having a beautiful view and I want more space, but I still have a 2010 Kia Forte that I bought for $3,000. That was from almost like an old life, but I'm just like, I don't know how I feel in the car. It's expiring. I'm starting to feel differently about it. But for years, I'm just like, this is fine. I have a kid. She throws freaking crumbs everywhere. And we live in San Francisco where your car gets beat up and you need a tiny car to fit in tiny spaces. This is fine. So for me, that's how I've justified, like, I will spend and I'm bougie in a lot of ways, but I have like kind of a janky car because that's okay because I don't value that. I would rather invest it in other ways.
Can I say something spicy?
Yeah.
Because you said it earlier. You said, I deserve this. I think that's the worst way to make spending decisions, period. Because fundamentally, you deserve everything.
Yeah.
It's actually not a helpful barometer.
It's true.
Fundamentally, you deserve the world.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve everything. So if you deserve everything, you still have to make decisions. So what is in alignment with your values? And I want, especially in the personal side of things, like I actually value having a lot of money and having financial security. I value having my investment portfolio sitting there that could catch me at any time if my business fell apart. I value having a ton of savings, just like I value the nice clothing and the expensive shampoo. And I am not putting my financial security at risk with the shampoo. So again, coming back to like, sometimes we can use I deserve this as justification to spend all our money. And it's like, that's fine. If you don't value financial security, that's fine. Spend all your money. But if you do value financial security, you have to add that into your plan.
Oof, that is so good. You deserve the world. So that's not going to be the justification for everything. Yeah.
No, you're a human being. Fundamentally, you deserve everything that you want.
Yes. Oh, and that's something that I'm like, not everyone thinks that they do. And so they're like, well, I deserve this, but not this. But I'm like, but you actually can use that across the board for everything. There's one thing that I wanted to ask you about, because it was something that, I mean, this is specific to scaling and this was specific to my journey. And you call it the squeeze. The way that I describe the squeeze is that you will have a certain income in your business, and eventually for you to be able to get your time back and still have your income go up without your time then going up, you will inevitably end up where your expenses are going to go up and temporarily your income may go down, and how you actually prepare yourself for that. This is something that you coached me through last year when to date, it's always like, okay, I'll go through a bigger squeeze in the future. But to date, that was like my biggest one, because I actually planned for how I would run out of money and what I would do. So I just wanted to ask you, like, what is the squeeze and what role does like that play in like scaling, and just tell us more about that.
Yeah,
and then I can kind of share a little bit about how you helped me.
Okay. If you don't want to grow your business, you don't have to worry about this. That's all. Whatever income level you're at, you can stay. I say that to say, like, this sounds scary and you don't have to go through it if you don't want to. If you're happy with your current income, you can stay there and make it as profitable as you want. Cool. But if you want to grow your income, you will go through the squeeze. Every time you want to grow your income, you'll go through the squeeze, unfortunately. And really, it is what you said. It's okay, if I want to grow my income, I have certain things I need to do, and that's going to 100% of the time correlate with increased expenses. That's going to correlate with team. That's going to correlate with new coaching expenses that are going to come up, new skills that you don't have that you need. It's going to correlate with new systems. It might be like projects, like systems builds, or just increased technology expenses. When I was at 30K, my tech was $200 a year. Now, scaling to a million, my tech is $200 a month. Like, that's just the reality, right? So to your point, here's what happens is like, you're at your current income level. Let's say you're at six figures and you want to go to 250. You're going to up your investments at the beginning, wherever you are now. But the 250 isn't just magically going to happen. The 250 is going to come. So in the temporary moment, your profit is going to go way down. And that's the profit squeeze, because you're still earning the same amount of money, but all of a sudden you're not having the same amount of money left in your bank account. And I think that there's a couple things to be said. Number one, just to normalize it, that like, you're not crazy. Nothing's going wrong. Everybody goes through this, but we just haven't ever really talked about it as a community. Like, this is what happens. That's number one. Number two, it's inevitable. If you want to scale, you're not going to avoid this. Stop trying to avoid it. Stop resisting it. It's not helping you. It's like when you're in quicksand and you're like moving around and you sink more. Don't resist it. Number three, ideally, we can catch you before the squeeze happens and you can decide to prepare for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're planning in 2024 to scale your income and you're planning for a squeeze, prioritize saving right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Build up those cash reserves. Those cash reserves are going to be your first line of defense.
Yes. And what that makes me think is you build up your reserves on purpose to pay for things when business, because people will say, but my business bank account is going down. And I'm like, that can be a neutral circumstance. It depends how you're looking at it, because we live off of, we operate off of reserves, not sales. And that's another huge thing when people are like, well, because I haven't made as much money in the last 2 months, I have to cut this thing. And it's like, no, right. You don't. That's not how we make business decisions.
I also fundamentally, like, 2 months is not enough time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I kind of make business decisions on an annual basis at this point. I don't evaluate things month to month because it's not a helpful amount of time.
We're building a runway, too. I think that, like, I'm now probably on, like, a six-month runway where I'm, like, I'm always, like, I don't need to make money for 6 months. Like, this is it's just fine. Like, I don't need to make money after 6 months. But I'm just like, let me just see what I need to, what do I need to do in the next 6 months? And what do I know I need? And what do I know my business needs in order for me to hit my goals and continue to make those investments while you still have feelings about your income going down temporarily? That was huge. Cause I could share, like, I made the least amount of money that I had ever made in Q3 of last year. And I've talked about this on other podcast episodes where I made, like, I sold like 12K. On purpose, but your brain wants to tell you it's not on purpose, right? And the most expenditure in that quarter, because I rebranded, I launched a podcast, and just all the things. And so planning for the squeeze helped me because I think my nervous system, like, we react to, like, surprises. And so I think the more I wasn't surprised, and you helped me see if you're only giving yourself the option of what I have in my business bank account is all I have versus could there be other places that you could tap into, finance temporarily? It's better to acknowledge them and say, no, I don't need to do them than to say, I don't have them. And you gave the analogy of it's like you're at a buffet table and you're like, but I only can eat like the rice. I can't eat anything else. Of course, you're going to go into it and you're going to freak out. So that in itself, for me, what that allowed me to do is go into a launch better resourced because I invested in the rebrand, I invested in the podcast, I invested in the additional support. I had a designer that I hired who I think we both have worked with in the past, and that allowed me to move so much faster that I made more than 100K more in this second launch. But that was because I didn't then pause the investments that I know that I needed to make. I planned for the squeeze instead, and that's what you helped me. So that was like what that looked like for me. But I have a lot of thoughts.
No, it can still feel scary. And that's why, like, having a good money coach in your corner is so helpful, because it's still going to feel scary even if you're prepared. But I want to touch on a couple things that you said. Number one, the squeeze usually happens when you go through a business transition. Like, I go from selling one-on-one coaching to group, or I go from evergreen to launches, or I go from group to membership. If there's ever like a transition in how or what you sell, that's usually going to correlate with a squeeze. Because even like going from one-on-one coaching to group, like, you have to learn a whole new marketing skill and way. Yeah. That's just going to take some time.
Systems. It needs systems and a different team structure to support. So it isn't just at arbitrarily deciding and that it's all going to be the same. You have to resource yourself differently.
Like, you have to learn a new skill. Selling group is different than selling one-on-one, for example. So you have to give yourself time to learn the skill. That's usually when a squeeze can happen. And then number two, what you said about the buffet. So remember when I said saving is your first line of defense? It's not the only line. Debt is a line of defense.
Oof. Yes, please.
Debt is not debt is not a punishment for being bad at money. Debt is actually the number one wealth builder in America. It's just that the rooms we're in is not talking about it that way.
Yeah. That was so funny because I've had a lot of thoughts about, a lot of my clients have thoughts about debt. They're like, I'm in debt. And when you've said, like, no, in, you know, white male rooms, and in, you think about startups, you think about tech, like, all they do is get into debt. It's fundraising, but they'll call it like VC, and it's seed fundraising, and they don't, it's not labeled in the same way. How do you think they do that? And some of the businesses aren't even profitable for years, but they operate
so
on
frustrating
debt. So yes,
yeah,
I think it's huge.
Last year I went through a squeeze and I racked up $45,000 of debt, and I had no thoughts about it. I was neutral about it. And then one day when I followed my debt system, I paid it off in line for TSA at the Newark airport in one click. And then I moved on. But the debt never caused me to change my marketing plan. That's the problem I see, is that your debt will cause you to make different decisions in your business. That is what's tripping you up, not the debt. It's the fact that you're changing your plan because you feel bad. In another world, you could just feel neutral and not change your plan and then pay off the debt fast.
Yes, because how is that going to solve your problem, essentially? And I know you've asked us that as well. It's like, how is that going to solve your problem? Same thing with sales. So it's like, I almost feel like in some ways, debt and sales can be interchangeable if you are cutting off something that's going to help you solve the problem of the sales. So that's so good.
It's huge. So debt, I recommend, like, if you have enough business history, not everyone has, like, a lot of institutions will not offer businesses debt unless they've been in business for 2 years. So there's that to consider. But a line of credit with your bank is a super great way because they're lower interest. A small business loan, if you can get one. A business credit card, of course, is great. It's just a little bit higher interest. That's fine.
And you could even get a 0%. I'm on one now, and I got it on purpose to stretch out a bigger investment.
I mean, last year, even with my $45,000 of debt, I went back and I categorized. First of all, interest. When you pay interest, it's a tax deduction. Why is interest a tax deduction? Because interest is a service fee, and it's a service fee that you pay for the access to capital. Just like Kajabi is a tax deduction for me because I pay them a service fee for access to their technology. Neutral. I paid Visa about $1,400 last year, even with $45,000 of debt, because I paid it off quickly because I stuck to my marketing plan and I didn't make paying interest spin me out.
Yes, meaning you need to change your course of action.
I didn't change. And I think that's the core thing is like, are you going to stick to your plan, the plan that was thought out when you were feeling calm and good? Or are you going to change your plan when you feel crappy because of some financial circumstance? And that's usually what causes more debt or less sales or whatever. It exacerbates the problem.
Mm-hmm. I see that. And I think that's like probably the biggest, like how we react to it and being able to observe the feeling and the thoughts and then say, but that doesn't change what I need or what my business needs. So that has been huge for me to be able to objectively do that and not say that I don't need, that I can't have the reaction. I can still have the thoughts about it.
Totally.
But I get coaching on it. And that's why I think.
Is it like, do you have, you can still have the thoughts about it, but then process them before you take action out of it.
Oof. Yeah.
Right? Like we're all human. We're still going to have the thoughts, but just don't take the action.
Action like while you're like, I'm going to take the action so I don't feel this way. And it's like, well, maybe you won't feel as activated in the short term because the expenditure is going to go down in the short term, but then the problem's still going to be there with fewer resources. So
I just posted a podcast episode about, it's called If You Want to Stay in Business, You Need to Save, because saving is a core business skill. But I also think if you want to stay in business, you have to learn how to get comfortable with debt. When I was at QuickBooks, there was no business I met that hadn't used debt at one point or another.
That's true.
It's actually like the majority of businesses use debt. So why do you specifically have to feel bad?
Mm-hmm. And I think I'll know that too with like the willingness to take it on, because I know that that's a thought where I was like, oh, I don't want to even put that on the table. But putting it on the table just opened up like another world, because even looking at things that I didn't even know existed that you kind of showed me was like, if you have a Stripe account, you typically will always have a Stripe Capital loan that is available to you right there. So it's like we have more things at our disposal than we think about, but we'll immediately eliminate debt as like, oh no, like that's the last resort. When literally like people buy cars with debt, people buy houses with debt. Like it's the word debt, but it's like, it could just be financing. Like
just call it leverage. And there you go. Yeah. That's what rich people call it. They call it leverage. Can we talk about the table really quick too?
Yes.
So the table analogy is like when you say, I don't want to use debt, that's like, I don't want to touch that, Gina. You're just taking an option off the table. So like if you have a table of financial options in front of you, especially before going into a squeeze, when you take options off the table, you have less options left, right? And if you have, like, let's say, Gina, I don't want to use my savings and I don't want to go into debt. Well, then the only option left is to make sales. And then you have one option and then you say, this option better fucking work. Otherwise, I'm out. And then you put all the pressure on that one option versus when you have a table full of, I can make sales, I can sell this thing, I can use my savings, I can use debt, I can use a line of credit, I could get a Stripe loan, I could pull from this, you have like 10 options. You go, okay, I'm going to start with trying to just make sales first and make it work that way. But if that doesn't work, I have 10 other options.
You get to decide which options you put on the table, but having there be more than one, because I decided in my squeeze that I didn't want to touch my investment portfolio or like my 3 months of savings. Like I wanted that to be there. But when I gave myself the option of financing, Stripe loan, small business loan, that I was like, that's fine, pick, but you can't say it has to be this one option because that's where everything squeezes.
You add like tons
walls
of pressure.
Should close in on you.
You also get to decide the order of operations.
Yeah,
so you get to decide, okay, first I'll try sales, then I'll do debt, then I'll do this, then I'll do that. You get to decide the order. My order is cash flow first, business savings second, line of credit third, credit cards fourth, tax savings fifth. So notice how even like my savings are bifurcated and taxes I like to touch last. And then there's other ones, like you get to decide your order, but it's so much more helpful to decide that when you're calm, not when you're in the middle of the squeeze.
But the order requires a list. And I think sometimes they're like, no, it has to be sales or like nothing else, which just closes it off. Is there anything that I haven't asked you or that you want to talk about or just say that we haven't brought up?
Should I be mean or should I be nice?
You know me. I was like, if it's me, I'm like, no, tell people. Like, tell me.
Okay.
You know, anything.
Okay. I'm going to be mean. A lot of entrepreneurs are like, I don't want to deal with the money. I just want to make enough money so that I don't have to look at my money. I'm a creative. I'm not a money person. I am bad at math. Or I don't know how to use spreadsheets, right? Like a lot of entrepreneurs did not come into entrepreneurship to be accountants, to be money people, right? And I understand that. Here's where Mean Coach comes in. Your job as the CEO is to manage your business's money. These are skills that you need to learn. And luckily, they don't have to be complicated. They don't have to be super technical or scary, but avoiding learning them is going to cost you money. Saying, but Gina, I have an accountant, not enough. Your accountant isn't in their day-to-day making cash flow decisions for you. You could even say, Gina, I have a CFO. Don't care. Not enough. You need to be proficient in this skill. And so many of us go into avoidance because we tell ourselves that we're bad at it. But like, you should see me. Every time I have a call with my clients, I pull up my calculator because I can't even do basic arithmetic in my head. I'm terrible at math in my head. This skill is not about being technically math-minded. It's more about actually just looking at your money and making financial decisions on purpose. And you all can learn that. You've already learned so much of it, most likely, that you're not giving yourself credit for. But coming back to our kind of like thesis for this day, it's really, really, just because of everything we've covered today, it's really hard to scale your business when you have really sticky thoughts about money. And guess what? On the flip side, it's actually kind of easy to scale your business when you have very good thoughts about money. I've been thinking so much about that. Like, I've doubled my business every year. That's crazy. And I've been thinking like, okay, I have a lot of the same coaches my peers have. Why have I felt like relatively easy about it? I'm like, because I feel so clear about money, I don't have to work through that obstacle every day. And so on the flip side, business could be 10x easier when you have neutral thoughts about money.
Absolutely. And what it makes me think about is like, and those of us who came from corporate can kind of see this analogy more so, that it's like, if it was your job to advise a business and consult the business on growing, you would probably have a lot more just neutral fact-based thoughts. You'd be like, okay, this is what the business has done. What does the business need? Do they need to change things operationally? But when it's our business, we just attach our thoughts to it. So I think what managing our thoughts around money and knowing actually how to manage money does is just allows us to access more of our own problem solving and rational decision making that's already there.
And to your point, when you're like in corporate consulting some other business, it's neutral because you feel like it doesn't mean anything about you. But when it's your own business, we can often say the numbers mean something about me as a person, and they don't. They don't. That can be harder to get to. But just like if you were consulting some random ass corporate business, it could be the same level of neutrality. Your numbers don't mean anything about you. coming back, your identity is the thoughts you think about yourself, regardless of the circumstance.
Yes. And that's why that's so good. The circumstances are always going to change. And that's,
oh my God,
like a moving target constantly.
It'd be so exhausting to try and keep up.
Yes. There's so, you know me, Gina. It's like, I could talk, there's so much. But I think that what I really wanted, like what we really talked about today was like, just a lot of the attachment thoughts, the safety thoughts, the, you know, really talking about money, managing money. It's just like a skill set we learn as opposed to like meaning something about us. All of those things I think are just so valuable for like my audience to hear, and things that I've personally worked through, because I think that it really just helps us see that we are, what we're doing in growing a business can have a lot of circumstances that we can attach meaning to, but how do we want to show up to those things versus trying to avoid like what we consider like bad situations to happen. It's just like, no, it's just, we're growing a business and it's going to need different things and we're going to need different things. And money management is a skill set. Like when you said, being a CEO means learning how to manage your money. I thought that was so good. With that being said, what opportunities do you have coming up for people to work with you? Like, tell us about your programs and just kind of what is coming up for you.
So like I mentioned at the beginning, I have two programs. Mm-hmm. Six Figure Saver is my 12-month foundational program where we really hone in on business finance, all the business side of things, how to save 100K in 12 months, learning our system to pay off debt. I alluded to it where I said I clicked one payment, $45,000 gone. We teach that in Six Figure Saver. We teach owner's pay. We teach all the business side of things because we really want to get your business squared away. There is no income requirement to join. A lot of people get caught up on like, Gina, I don't even make 100K. I can't save 100K. The majority of the people in that program are at 80 to 120K. So like, it's not as fancy as you may be making it up in your mind to be. It's not like all seven-figure entrepreneurs by any means. I love that program. And then I have my 6-month mastermind, Seven Figure Wealth, where we talk about the personal side of things. We talk about building wealth portfolios outside of your business so you can generate true passive income, meaning income that requires zero work. Eventually, I want all my clients to be living off of their assets, not their business income. And I've just been thinking so much about that too. Like, part of why my business is so fun is because I have a portfolio to fall back on. And it's almost like I get to be here. I don't have to be here. And I want that for all of my people in Seven Figure Wealth to just have this sense of like, I got assets on assets on assets.
Seven Figure Wealth. It is. And I can say that for sure. Just like that, even just starting a wealth portfolio last year, literally it was 10 months ago. Like, and so I feel like I'm such the poster child of like, even if you have all these circumstances, but even just the feeling that I have around knowing that my money is growing has already, like I've already seen it attach, I've attached less to my business. So it's just so good. And I thank you for just being with us today, for sharing your knowledge, and just let folks know how they can find you.
Yeah. I have various masterclasses throughout the year, but the best thing to do is just get on my email list because we'll let you know what's happening. You can go to www.ginanox.co and find many ways to get onto our email list. And then I hang out on Instagram a lot at Gina Knox. That's probably my favorite place. And I also have a podcast. I think we've mentioned it.
Yes.
Love the podcast.
Years.
With Gina Knox. We'll link it. But you can also find it on the website.
Perfect.
So all the places.
Yes. Thank you so much, Gina. I appreciate
you. Thank you. This was so fun.
Now, if you have listened to this entire episode and you are thinking about working with me as your one-on-one mentor for 6 months, you can learn more and apply at mariellaDellamora.com. There you'll find dozens of client success stories from business to leadership coaching, which will give you an idea of what you can expect, the range of clients I work with, and my coaching style.